Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicharian, former NFL scout and currently of Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of footballoutsiders.com. We are here with Justin Stein, as usual, coming off a stirring first round, one that I thought was kind of chalk at the beginning.
And then got crazy.
Yeah. So we're just kind of digesting that a little bit. So I think the plan is to just kind of walk through it. We're recording this right after midnight here, right after the first round ended. But yeah, any high-level comments?
I have so many questions. How do you pronounce Igbinoghene? What is going on at Mike Vrabel's house? How angry is Aaron Rodgers right now? And will he say a word to Jordan Love all year? And then, let's start with the pick that makes the least amount of sense from a Sports Info Solutions perspective, because I, too, have the Sports Info Solutions rookie handbook by my side. And when a name comes up that I don't know, I look up where you had him ranked. And the Atlanta Falcons, who needed a cornerback, took A.J. Terrell with the 16th pick, who you had as the 15th ranked cornerback on your board. 15th. That's not good. That's not a first round pick. So a lot of wild stuff happened after that pretty chalky first 10 or 11 picks.
Yeah, we were not super high on A.J. Terrell, a guy that I thought I've seen a lot of Clemson play, and he's not a guy that ever stood out to me as somebody that was making a difference on their defense. The reports came in on him, and quite honestly, this was a report that had a grade level that it never made it up to me up the ranks in terms of going through the reports. You know, I'm only evaluating a certain level of players. I expect to evaluate the top 16 picks. This seemed like a reach, and this was a kind of theme of the night. Justin was just saying it just before we started here. There were a lot of corners that came off the board that felt a little bit reachy.
Three picks later, Damon Arnett was a guy people thought was going to go third round or so that the Raiders took first.
And then, of course, my childhood Dolphins with, I know you tried to pronounce his name before.
Igbinoghene.
Yeah, Noah.
A team that in our ESPN draft guide, we listed for every team their biggest need, their quiet need, and their not a need. And what we listed for not a need was cornerback. Because they have Byron Jones, Xavien Howard, Nick Needham, and Bobby McCray. And now they've got Noah Igbinoghene, too.
Yeah, Igbinoghene, obviously, okay, so we know the book on him. Track athlete, third-year junior, so a guy that has that athletic upside in terms of what he can be coming out. So you understand what they're looking at there. But the concerns are also, I think, there, obviously. If you're going to play press man, he's been a guy that's shown a lot of upside in terms of that, and that's obviously what the Dolphins want to do. There's some talk they maybe want to move him inside. He showed some ability to play inside and outside, 18% of his snaps in the slot his last year, according to the Football Rookie Handbook. But this is a guy with just one interception in his college career. Yes, he allowed 40% completions again, so that's impressive when you look at him on the statistics. Also, really good in terms of positive percent against quarterback rating against those kind of stats. So it's not that he hasn't performed, but it's a little bit of a projection here, I think, taking a guy like this and thinking that he's going to come in. So they're certainly really strong. We've seen the Ravens do this at cornerback, building at that position with just guys on guys on guys. So maybe that's some of the theory here. You can't have enough of these types of players. But I thought there are a lot of kind of corners at this level that were kind of available. There are guys, and I'm not saying he's not a good player, but I think he's a guy that it's hard for me to say that he's going to be a stud Pro Bowl level corner, and that's why it feels like a weird pick.
It doesn't feel as weird as – it's not as weird as the Terrell pick or the Arnett pick. I think those are seen as bigger reaches. To take those guys at 16 and 19 than taking Igbinoghene at 30 – but Derek Klassen just looked at Igbinoghene this week in his last futures column for Football Outsiders and talked about how he's a press man corner who basically can't do anything else. All he can do is press, but he's really good at that one thing.
Yeah, I can't think of a lot of analogous players that I would say they can only do that I've scouted. So it's an interesting kind of test case. So I'm curious to see, and I haven't watched a lot of him, admittedly, so I'm curious to kind of see some more and see how it performs.
The other, I mean, there's so many picks. The first, let's start at the beginning, right? Because the first 10 11 picks go almost as everyone expected. The only possible kind of weirdness is that Derrick Brown went to the Carolina Panthers instead of Isaiah Simmons, but Simmons just went one pick later to Arizona. I thought C.J. Henderson to Jacksonville made a ton of sense. They needed a corner. Cleveland and New York Jets got offensive tackles. All fine. Henry Ruggs to the Raiders with the 12th pick is interesting because there's not a really good record where the player who's got less usage in college goes first in the draft and outplays his teammate in the NFL. So I know the Raiders love speed, but it's surprising to see Ruggs go before Jerry Jeudy. And is Derek Carr the right guy to get him the ball downfield?
Yeah, Al Davis lives. Does Derek Carr? Because I'm not sure what the plan is in terms of lining up the skill set there to what goes on. So maybe it's a key. I don't think Derek Carr lacks arm strength. So the ability to get the ball downfield physically doesn't seem like something that escapes him. But certainly it's not been his MO as we've seen him progress through his career. So that'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Al Davis is definitely smiling to see Henry Ruggs come off at that pick. That certainly comes to mind. But then one other thing that the picture I have in my head is Nick Saban's face when James Carpenter came off the board earlier than he obviously expected when he was picked, how it was 10 years ago or whatever, how many years that was. This clear example of, wait, that's the player from my team that you picked right now? I'm pretty sure I knew which of my receivers was the guy that I'd rather have, but you seem to disagree, and I'm Nick Saban.
The other thing is then, so that's pick 12. 13 is Tristan Wirfs. Tristan Wirfs, total sense for Tampa. But what's interesting is that they had to trade three picks or something. No, they had to give help San Francisco go up like 140 picks to get San Francisco to move back one pick. Somebody else must have been trying to get into pick 13. And San Francisco told Tampa, if you help us move up so many picks, we'll give you pick 13 instead. Because otherwise, it doesn't make any sense to trade that to San Francisco for a player San Francisco wasn't going to take.
Yeah, it's funny because I think it's good value at that pick. I don't begrudge the Bucks for going and getting their guy, especially given where they're at as a franchise. But at the same time, I think that John Lynch once again kind of Trubisky'd another team into doing this pick exchange, and it boggles my mind.
Yeah, I understand it because there were four big tackles, and I think people saw a gap between those four guys and Austin Jackson, and Tampa didn't want someone else to get. They needed a right tackle. They absolutely needed a right tackle. That's what they needed.
And on that note, certainly I did too. The huge gap from the top 12. I think being in those top 12 guys, and then, you know, aside from the guys I'm accepting from that, C.J. Henderson and Justin Herbert, but there were players that I thought really separated themselves. And then Austin Jackson behind those other tackles, I thought the first four guys, you're really getting guys that are either ready-made or have upside to just be perennial Pro Bowler difference makers for your team. Austin Jackson has a ton of upside, really athletic player. I watched several games on him. He's a guy, the concern is that he totally got run over in some games. He was a guy that didn't show much anchor ability at all. And you see all the athletic upside, but this is a young player, and the hope there for the Dolphins has to be that he's going to develop into somebody that can really be that ideal left tackle going forward. But I would be very nervous about playing him as a left tackle in his first year. I think I'd feel much better about starting him off on the right side just because I think he's going to struggle with that anchor ability early, and maybe he'll grow into it. Maybe we're talking about a 20-year-old, and as he projects forward, this will be a player that will grow into it, and he has all the athletic ability. But yeah, I agree with your point that compared to the top four, it's a big drop off.
Between those two, Jeudy to Denver, 15th, and Lamb to Dallas, 17th, that is just an embarrassment of riches for the Dallas Cowboys to have C.D. Lamb now to go along with Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and same thing on the Broncos side of things.
Well, they're not quite as deep. I mean, they've got Cortland Sutton, and they've got Noah Fant at tight end, but the wide receiver group is not quite as deep.
No, not quite as deep, but the top two, I think that projects pretty well when you look at how good Sutton was, and then adding Judy to that, that's tantalizing. And then, yeah, CeeDee Lamb, I think the Cowboys put themselves in a place where a lot of people were talking about, are they going to take one of these young quarterbacks? Are they going to take Jordan Love? And they went in the direction where, no, we're going to reinforce this position. And I think they've got their offense in a place where no matter who their quarterback is, that quarterback's in a pretty good position to succeed between their offensive line, who they have in the receiver options, and obviously what they have in the backfield.
So let's skip down a couple picks here. Let's talk about Jordan Love because, wow. I mean, they just signed Rodgers to a big extension, right, like a year ago, and his cap, he's untradeable for at least the next 2 years. So by the time Love becomes the quarterback, they get like 2 years of him maybe? And then they have to sign him to an extension? Like, this isn't like when they drafted Rodgers, Favre was talking about retiring every year and waffling back and forth. And they weren't paying him what they're paying Rodgers now. Like, there's just no room for Green Bay to move on from Rodgers for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I don't think there's room to. I don't know why you'd want to.
I don't like Love as a prospect on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. You know, the physical ability is there. I understand what there is to like about him. Personally, I'm with you. I'd rather see a guy that's performed more. The drop-off from 2 years ago to this last year is just ridiculous with him when you look at it across every single metric. And yes, that has to do with his team, but on some level, you want your guy to elevate your team. When I look at this kind of this situation, though, I really can't wrap my head around it. I don't understand what you're doing. Like, if I try to think about the best, let's look at it this way. Like, let's try to disprove the null hypothesis. If I try to think of the best example, it's like the Patriots drafting Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round and eventually trading him for a third round pick. If somehow the Packers think that, like, oh, well, if Rodgers is still around 3 years from now and still going well, we can dish him off or something. We'll have developed him in our system and then he'll have more value. That's the only way I can really think about this, as because otherwise all you're doing is you're saying every scenario is onto the next window and hello, you've got Aaron Rodgers. Your window is right now.
And Brady was older. I mean, yeah, Brady wasn't, Brady was not waffling about retiring. Brady was pretty obstinate about the fact that he was going to keep playing. But Brady was older at that point when they drafted Garoppolo than what Rodgers is now. And I just, yeah. And that pick was later, right? Like the Garoppolo pick was much later than the Love pick.
Yeah. Around later. Yeah.
Rodgers is under, I'm looking it up right now. Rodgers is under contact through 2023. The dead money in 2022, the dead money from trading him is still going to be like $17 million. For a trade, it'll be $14 million. $14 million in dead money for trading him in 2022.
Why are you doing that? You got Aaron Rodgers. You already struck the lottery. Like, what are we talking about here?
There's no way you're trading him in the next 2 years. There's just no way. There's just way too much dead money who comes onto your cap if you trade him.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to sound hypocritical. It's not like I would criticize the Packers for drafting Aaron Rodgers when they had Brett Favre, but I think this is a different situation entirely. It seems pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's a little nuts.
Okay, let's hop back 2 picks though to the 24 spot. Cesar Ruiz, the offensive lineman out of Michigan to the Saints. I heard a lot of criticism saying, wait, what? Didn't the Saints draft a center last year? What's going on?
This is planning ahead. That's all. It's just planning ahead. Larry Warford at right guard becomes a free agent after this year. Ruiz goes right into that spot. It's the same thing they did with Ryan Ramczyk at right tackle. Planning ahead.
Right. They could trade Warford as well. They have to pay him for another year, it looks like, in terms of salary. But either Ruiz slots in now in that position, he's depth in the interior. If you look at the Saints and their roster, there aren't a whole lot of needs when you look around. So I heard some people calling this a luxury pick. I think anytime you're reinforcing the offensive line, you're doing the meat and potatoes. You're doing the right thing.
Well, it's a luxury pick in that they took a guy who's very likely not going to help them this year. It's a pick for the future.
And I apologize if my dog Mia was growling a little bit in the background there. She's got more of an appetite for, you know, the wide receivers, the defensive backs, you know, the sexy positions.
Jordan Brooks to Seattle, there was a lot of people talking about, but you guys had Jordan Brooks really high. You had him as the number two middle linebacker on your board.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of love for a lot of middle linebackers. So, I mean, it wasn't like we had a high grade on him. I think he got picked a little higher than our grade would indicate for him. But I understand the pick in terms of what he provides for them. He's a true Mike that has a lot of speed. So when you look at a guy that's really going to add speed to your defense, he fits the profile of what the Seahawks have drafted in terms of guys whose athletic upside exceeds maybe their film production that we've seen from them in college. So he kind of fits the bill for what the Seahawks have looked for. And they've had a lot of success with guys like that. So I'm going to pump my brakes before I criticize that one too much.
Looking also near the bottom, I mean, do you have any feelings about Patrick Queen? I felt slipped a little bit. He's perfect for the Ravens. And they needed an inside linebacker badly.
Yeah, he fits great in there. Like anytime you can just sit back and let people fall to you, I feel like that's what the Ravens did here. It's just an example of a really good player that, again, really good speed. And I think he kind of can do more for you than a Jordan Brooks, for example. So just a great example of staying put and trading down if you can, but if not, grabbing the guy that comes to you. And I think that was a really good pick, especially in terms of, you know, we talked about this draft and the thought that some of the picks were like maybe we as the public weren't going to know as much about what was going to go on because all the mock drafts were way off and all of the teams were going to be picking in a way that we couldn't anticipate because of the usual communication that goes on. And in the top half of the first round, it felt like it was more chalk than it's ever been. Like teams were really going with where we expected them to go. And in the bottom half, it felt like guys were coming off the board that we could have never expected to come here. And I wonder if that'll continue, that sort of trend where at the top, the scouts did what the scouts do. There was consensus on who these guys were. But in a typical year, you'll get more from the numbers, the doctors, et cetera, that'll put people on the same plane. And maybe this year it got kind of more off the board because I think as we look towards the end of the first round, we did see some more players, especially those corners like we talked about before, that seemed to come off a little bit more unexpectedly than we might have expected.
One other player just to talk about, and that's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the last pick of the first round. I did not think Kansas City would really, despite the fact that everybody kept mocking them running backs, I didn't think that Kansas City really would do a first-round running back. That being said, while, you know, we can make all the same arguments about running backs that we always do, and Kansas City won the Super Bowl with a seventh-round pick as its main running back. So why they would need a guy in the first round, I don't know. But, and our backcast system at Football Outsiders didn't like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But despite both of those things, he's the perfect fit for their offense, and from a fantasy football perspective, he's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's one of the most fun players in the draft. Any criticism about taking him at this pick is totally couched by how much I completely love him and how much I think he's going to be a really great fit in this offense, clearly. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the problem is at this pick, can you really make a case that he's a great value add compared to J.K. Dobbins, compared to DeAndre Swift, compared to these, you know, there are several players that you could mention kind of in that category. And then besides that, the category of every other position besides running back. So obviously I'm very excited about how he's going to fit into that offense. But I wonder, looking around, are there other players where you look at kind of where they landed? I feel like that's a really good landing spot for him. Are there other people that have landed in interesting spots where you think, oh, wow, that's really going to behoove that player or that team?
Brandon Ayuk averaged, what, like 11 yards after the catch last year, and now he's in a Kyle Shanahan offense?
Yep. That always helps, especially when they're looking for targets. I definitely thought also with the Panthers passing on Isaiah Simmons, shout out to the UNC crew who was excited for that Isaiah Simmons pick, and Derek Brown came in there. It was interesting to see Isaiah Simmons is going to be really excited, kind of shades of Honey Badger back there, obviously a different body type. So I thought that one was interesting to look at too. Also, I want to give some credit to Dave Gettleman. I don't know, you know, we could argue all day about how well they did in terms of picking Daniel Jones last year and whether or not they're set at the quarterback position. But if they were going to go in a different direction, there were a few players that I liked. But in terms of the offensive tackles, Andrew Thomas was the top tackle in the Football Rookie Handbook, and for good reason. I think he slots in really well as a starting left tackle for them. For all the criticisms I have of Dave Gettleman in terms of a manager of his roster, I think that he does understand scouting to an extent at many positions. So I do like that pick there.
I assume that he plays right tackle his first year, and that at a certain point, then Solder becomes cuttable. Probably Solder gets cut after 2020, and then he moves to left tackle in his second year.
I think that's reasonable, and I think he fits either side, and he'll start on the right and then move to the left. I think that's totally the vision there, and that makes sense.
Sports Info Solutions brings you the second annual edition of the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, with scouting reports and statistical breakdowns on over 280 college football players who are likely to be drafted or signed as rookie free agents in 2020. New features this year include unique and informative NFL team pages, research deep dives by the SIS R&D team, and, for the first time ever, the NCAA version of the SIS flagship football statistic, Total Points. At Sports Info Solutions, we collect and analyze college football players like it has never been done before. Whether you're a film junkie, an aspiring analyst, or just looking for the most comprehensive information on what your NFL team's rookies did while they were playing college football, this book has what you are looking for and more. Michael Lombardi, former NFL general manager and three-time Super Bowl winner, said, "This book is the closest fans will get to reading real NFL scouts reports, because it is detailed reporting with a complete understanding of what it takes to play in the NFL. Well done." John Park, the manager of research and strategy for the Indianapolis Colts, said, "Scouts matter because not everything that counts can be counted, and relevant data matters since not everything that can be counted counts. With that said, SIS creates relevant football data that matters." Please check out the SIS Football Rookie Handbook. It is available wherever you get books. You can get it on acta.com, acta.com. You can get it on amazon.com, or you can find it at Barnes & Noble. That's the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, comprehensive scouting and analytics guide, all of the 2020 NFL draft prospects, brought to you by Sports Info Solutions.
So do you have, I don't know if you have a list of your favorite players that are still out there. People are going to listen to this on Friday with Friday night rounds 2 and 3. Still to come, I know there's safeties. No safeties have been taken yet. No tight ends have been taken yet. Only one running back.
Yeah, I was definitely hoping that my old Dolphins might have looked at one of those safeties when they were picking around there. There are three safeties that I think are outstanding players. When you look at Delpit, I think Delpit didn't have the greatest senior year, but that was in terms of the expectations for him, which I think were pretty ridiculous. Antoine Winfield Jr., Total Points, absolutely loved him. Really productive. Obviously, the bloodlines are there, so he's an exciting player too. And Xavier McKinney, I think there's been plenty of talk about him. So to see him on the board too, we could see, I think, all three of those players coming off in the next 10 picks. I think that's totally expectable. There are a few more corners that I think could come off. You know, I thought some of these corners came off early, but I actually think the corner position right now, there's some depth there. There's some depth amongst the edge prospects that we've been looking at that might come off the board pretty soon. And then, as we've talked about all this time coming up, the depth at running back and receiver is going to be there, not just tomorrow, but going on to Saturday as well.
I'll tell you what's interesting is talk about a team that uses safeties a lot. And that's the New England Patriots, and they traded down like they often do, and they now have 5 picks tomorrow, including pick 37, which they picked up from the Chargers. I wouldn't be surprised to see them pick up one of those safeties.
Yeah, sometimes it's easy to look after the draft and say, oh, wow, you know, after CeeDee Lamb went at pick 17, it feels like there was a drop in the tier level of this year's draft. It's harder to anticipate that coming in, but I think the Patriots did a really good idea, did a really good job of anticipating exactly where they wanted to be, because I do think these bottom of the first round picks are not so different than a lot of the picks that are going to be coming on day two.
The one thing is they now have 13 picks. Now, Miami has 14 picks, but Miami has the room for that many rookies. The New England roster, I don't think, has room for 13 draft picks. I think they're going to need to either package a couple of those to move out, you know, from the sixth to the fifth or the fourth. Or I wouldn't be surprised to see them trade a couple of them for picks next year.
And there's no harm in drafting 13 guys and having 10 of them make your team.
Yeah, but, you know, there's not that much difference between a sixth-round pick and an undrafted free agent. So,
right, except that you get to choose who those guys are and you get to limit their contracts by the nature of it. I'm curious, do you think the Patriots, in all earnesty this year, are going after it? Because I think 50% of me thinks that the Patriots are going to win the AFC East, and 50% of me thinks that they're tanking. So where are you at?
I don't think they're tanking on purpose. I just don't see it in Belichick's nature to give up like that. I think they're going for it. Their defense is going to hit a lot of regression, and I think their offense is going to be very average at best. But I don't think they're trying to get Trevor Lawrence.
And who's the quarterback day one?
Jarrett Stidham. Can you see the happiness on my face on Zoom? Can you see how excited I am about that prospect?
I can see it, and all of the listeners can see it over the airwaves.
Yay, Jarrett Stidham. I would much prefer Cam Newton or Jameis Winston, but they don't have the money. They don't have the cap room.
And boy, would I hate to see that happen. All right. On that note, it is late. We will sign off and we will talk next week. Thank you to all of our listeners. We hope you enjoy the rest of the draft, and we will talk to you next time we come back. Have a great night and happy NFL draft.